This is Douglas Lowry, Joan and Martin Messinger Dean of the Eastman School of Music, and I'm here today with one of the University of Rochester's most illustrious icons, Paul Burgett, narrator for the Freedom Zephyr. Paul, it's great to have you with us here today.
Thank you, Doug, and it's a pleasure to be here and join you. Coming back to the Eastman School of Music is for me like coming home.
Well, you're always welcome here, Paul. When I was approached about this idea of writing this piece for the Rochester Philharmonic about the Underground Railroad, I didn't want to write something literal, and so I certainly have my own views about Zephyr and what that means. And you certainly bring a startlingly resonant voice to the text of this piece. Is there an interpretation of the word Zephyr that might resonate with you?
It's interesting you should ask that, because indeed there is. When I think of the word Zephyr, I think of a strong wind. And there's an interesting story, of course, in the text of the piece. There's the wonderful lyric from Swing Low Sweet Chariot, "Coming for to carry me home." And the story, as has been told orally and handed down by generations, is that in the old days, when the king died and was placed in the funereal boat on his way in the river, on his way to the Great Victoria Falls, on one occasion it was seen that the tribal elders who stood on the side of the either side of the river as the king made his way to Victoria Falls, that the skies opened up and a group of angels descended and took the king on a gust of wind into heaven. And so I couldn't help but think about that grand story as I considered the title of your wonderful piece, The Freedom Zephyr.
Well, you know, I was very intrigued to find out that there was a very, very strong bond, a linkage between spirituals and the general spirit of the movement. And so I'm of course, delighted that you picked up on that. And, of course, the biblical references, of course, were very strong as well. You know, you've been a serious student of jazz for a long time and an equally student series of music by composers whose work has not necessarily perhaps achieved the public success it deserves. Is there a common thread that runs through these interests for you that is related to this interest in culture and music and the sort of the spiritual earth of everything that's us in this country?
Well, it's interesting because my passion for the music of Black Americans, if you will, was fueled by my time as a graduate student at the Eastman School of Music. Thanks to our faculty here, particularly Donald Shuttler and Paul Lehman, who supported me completely in my doctoral work, and this was back in the late 60s, early 70s, when everybody was mad about something and needed something to protest. And I decided I needed to learn more about the music of part of the heritage that of which I was a part. And so my introduction to jazz, I'm a violinist, as you know, and my introduction to jazz was something of an outsider. But I became impressed by the fact that jazz is a cultural icon entirely consistent with American democracy. It is about freedom. Probably when you look at the literature of what jazz musicians say, for example, it is about freedom. Jazz musician after jazz musician will say it is about freedom. And of course, we need only to think about the sacraments of the music's composition to understand that improvisation is the key to that freedom. There are other musics of Black Americans which attempt to respond to the sacraments of the culture of Western European literate traditions that have had a harder time gaining an audience and gaining a hearing. And is some of this music about freedom than is it about struggle? The struggle to be included, the struggle to be accepted. So as I think about the music of Black Americans, jazz is the artistic point for the American principle of democracy and freedom, and the music of others, William Grant Still, William Levy Dawson, even Le Chevalier de St. George in the 18th century, and others, is a struggle to get free, so that their music is going to be heard alongside that of other musical icons of a Western literate tradition.
Well, it's the history of the city of Rochester, and certainly the University of Rochester, has been truly enriched by some notable freedom fighters. For example, Susan B. Anthony, and certainly Frederick Douglass. In the case of Douglass, he represented an historic figure that somehow captivated and galvanized the nation in an inspiring way, not just for the cause of liberty, but also a national agenda. To what might you attribute Douglass's ability to galvanize public opinion?
In the early part of this country's history, there are what I would call pioneers who were Renaissance men and women. Frederick Douglass easily is one of the earliest. There are others, people like W.E.B. Du Bois and Alan Locke and the entire Harlem Renaissance movement of the 1920s and the assumption of this idea of the New Negro, which was articulated by artists and poets and playwrights. In the case of Douglass, that was not his original name, by the way. He gave himself that name. He was originally Frederick Bailey and born a slave, but he changed his name, interestingly enough, to Frederick Douglass so as not to be, once he had escaped, so as not to be as easily identified and returned to slavery. He lived in Rochester for about 25 years. He was born in 1818 and he died in 1895. He lived in Rochester until 1872. And while he was here, he established a newspaper entitled The North Star. He associated with Susan B. Anthony. He was friends with William Lloyd Garrison, the great abolitionist. He knew Lincoln, of course, and he stumped for Ulysses S. Grant. So he was a key figure and something of a lonely figure as a pioneer in the abolitionist movement. He was self-educated. He taught himself to read and to write, and he understood that at that particular time in the 19th century, in the mid-19th century, verbal rhetoric was a powerful tool to move the masses. And so he developed his skills as a rhetorician, and in so doing, because he was right, and because he had developed a very strong sense of the importance of moving this nation away from slavery and to greater inclusion and diversity, did he become as well known and as important as he did.
You are an enthusiastic student of history, both of the city of Rochester and things historical in general, and of course the university. Is there some overarching trait about the life and the evolution of the University of Rochester that you found remarkable as you weave this institution into this interest that you have in composers and jazz and the culture?
You know, I came to Rochester as a freshman student at the Eastman School in 1964, which means that this September will mark my 49th year since my arrival. I'm like the man who came to dinner. I stayed and never left. And what happens when someone's been around for a spell is one begins to grow very interested in this place that grew him up, matured him and educated him, and then turned him loose in its behalf. And among the things that I have distilled from my study of the history and my look at the literature and my thoughts and investigation of the heroes of this community is, first, quality of the highest order is a sacrament of this culture not to be forsworn under any circumstances. Quality of the highest order as espoused by the founders of our university, by the founders of the Eastman School of Music, by the founders of our School of Medicine and Dentistry and our other schools, quality of the highest order has always been a premier value. So that's first. Secondly, the identification and cultivation of inspired and effective leadership has been a hallmark of our university, and indeed of the Rochester community generally. Of the Rochester community, we need point only to George Eastman. I cannot overstate how important the role George Eastman played in the growth and development of our community and our university. When I look at the inspired and effective leadership of the Eastman School of Music, Howard Hansen, who for 40 years from 1924 until 1964 grew this institution to the magnificent, internationally acclaimed institution that it is. George Whipple, the founding dean of the School of Medicine and Dentistry and a Nobel Prize laureate, developed established the curriculum for medical education that helped to transform medical education in the United States. Rochester was not the only place to do it, but we were one of those schools that were part of the revolution in medical education. So those two ideas, Doug, are very important. Quality of the highest order in everything that we do, and the identification and cultivation of inspired and effective, and I might add, generous leadership.
Well, well said, Paul. As always, your eloquence and spirit have always been such an inspiration for us all, and of course, we're thrilled to count you as one of our own here at Eastman. You're always welcome here. You're a university treasure, and it has been my great honor and privilege to have you serve as the founding narrator of this piece that I wrote. And it's a great honor and privilege, of course, to have you here today. Thank you very much for joining us here, Paul, and hope to see you soon.
Doug, thank you. And indeed, it was a privilege to be asked by you to be the premier narrative for your wonderful piece.
Wouldn't have it any other way, Paul. Thanks again.